give us the old razzle-dazzle. Here we are at Razzle Dazzle Radio, my friend Mo, my friend Carolyn, and another friend of mine, Linda Joy Burke. Today we're going to get a little more serious about some artists that we have known and loved here in Columbia, Maryland, that have passed on. Believe me, they are entertaining wherever they are, and the masses are still following them, and they will live in our hearts forever. And those people are our beloved John Taylor Kinderman, Fern Eisner, and Eva Anderson. And to speak on two of those people right now will be Linda Joy Burke speaking about John Taylor and Eva Anderson. She's a local poet, writer, and artist. She's been here a long time. I'm just going to say you've been here a long time. Leave it at that. She was John's sidekick, friend, overall helper, aide, personal assistant. I don't know. I could probably go on and on all the things that you were to John. So you probably knew him the best. I would always think that. So just in April, he was here, and did we have fun, Mo?
We had a great time.
Fun, yeah. Carolyn? Yeah. We sang, we danced, we kindersized, we talked about disco, we did the call the police, we did it all. So Linda, take us into John's life and tell us how you met, and tell us a little bit about him.
I think I'm probably like many of the people that have met John over the years. So he started out in the mall in Columbia when I was 20-something. That was over 40 years ago. And I happened to be going through the mall, and there was John in center court drinking coffee, holding court, drinking coffee, talking to people. And I didn't actually really know him that well then, but I knew him enough to say hi. And we kind of were like two ships passing in the night. I knew that he was doing disco, but I had no interest whatsoever in disco. I'm a little bit of a nerd. Actually, I am a nerd, so disco was not my thing. And I just thought he was an interesting personality. I ran into him in my mid-30s. He was part of my midlife crisis. So I ran into him at a grocery store one day. He's like, "How you doing? What are you doing? What are you up to now?" Like he usually does. "What are you up to now?" And I said, "I need a video." And I'm still doing poetry. And times were changing and people were producing videos to show themselves in poetry. And he says, "Well, I got a guy." And he always had a guy. John always had a guy. Always knew somebody that could do something, right?
Yep.
He had a guy that lived in his house. And the guy was Neil Rosenbaum, who is still a friend of mine. And he says, "Oh, Neil can shoot for you. He'll do that. You just go come over to my house." And so he brought me over to his house and he introduced me to Neil and he said, "She needs a video." And Neil said, "Okay." And then he left us there alone. And 3 hours later, I had video. And I was like, "Well, that's really interesting." And I looked around John's house and I said, "You know, I think he needs some help." And so I offered some services to him at that time.
Okay, and that is the beginning.
Which is the beginning. And so I offered some services to him, and he took me up on it. And I had never met a personality like him. And in that particular time in Columbia, we were all still young in Columbia, and we were all still sort of open to each other and having conversations with each other and
yes.
and gracious and friendly, and people's doors were open. So, you could come and go anytime you wanted.
Right.
And so
it was a good time.
It was within that spirit that I became more engaged with John and John's life. And he was just starting to transition into kindersize at the time. And moving from doing these shows and charging, a minimal amount of money to really deciding that this was a brand for him and to build the cadre that would work with him, which was a cadre of artists and musicians. And he still had his feet in the dance community also.
Absolutely.
Which was with Willa Bland, who also passed this past year with Flair Dance Studio, and Eva, who is a contemporary. And so all of these people who were all contemporaries were all sort of building their legacy in those moments in the dance community. And I don't know if you ever met Willa, Carolyn, but Willa was these individuals, they all came from radically different kind of upbringings, but energetically, they were the same people.
Interesting.
Yeah. Which for me, I realized I'm a poet, and poets are serious. You know, we think a lot about deep thoughts, and, you know, we're always looking for the metaphors and the symbolism, and we're always, like, deeply thinking about things. And, you know, what I got from John, which used to irritate the heck out of me, was, you know, have fun, be happy, you know, yeah, it's gas. Yeah. And I'm like, no, you have to be serious, think deeply about things.
Well, one who was serious, of course, was our beloved Eva Anderson. And
yes,
the two of us have shared many magic moments with her. And I would like to congratulate you, by the way, on the book that you published, Buddy's Garden, which depicted all of Eva's favorite flowers. Before I ask you to read that beautiful memory that you will share with our radio listeners, I would like to do a pitch right now. And this is, you know, I'm the political one here. It bothers me that our newspapers, although John Kinderman did get recognition, but that Eva never got it. And Fern Eisner, the wonderful photographer, the supporter of the arts, the supporter of every single local activity here in Columbia for all those years we've lost her. How about if the listeners out there, if you would nominate Fern Eisner for the Howie Award? Now, I know that John received it.
Yes.
And Eva did.
Yes.
So, listeners out there, nominations are now open online through the Howard County Center for the Arts. With that, I'd like you to share the memories that you have of Eva.
Okay. So many people don't know about the personal Eva, who was a Renaissance woman, who was a master gardener. And Carolyn referred to the book Eva's Garden, which was dedicated to Buddy, which is this amazing garden that she cultivated. She actually grew her own moss, and the moss, how you grow moss, you don't know how to grow. You take moss, and she got moss from all over the country, and you blend it with buttermilk, and you spread it on your ground, and then you have moss. And one day, Eva and I were standing in front of her house, and this guy, this lawn care guy, came, and he says, "Who does your grass?" And Eva says, "We don't need anybody." He says, "Are they blind?" And he's like, "No, it's natural, this moss, and it's a whole carpet of moss. It's absolutely astounding." What Carolyn is referring to is Eva's. Eva has a memoir, which is an unpublished memoir. I was actually the typist for this. And I wanted to just talk a little bit about the contrasting of Eva's upbringing versus John Taylor's upbringing. I have some memoir from him also that's unpublished. Eva's parents, paternal grandparents, were both slaves. They had an affiliation with the Presbyterian Church. This accidental situation made it possible for them to be educated. After the Emancipation Proclamation, Mary Magdalene Bomer and author Augustus Jones were married and opened a school to educate ex-slaves under the auspices of the Presbyterian Church. The school was called Mather. They were able to educate all 10 of their children and give each a college degree. My father was a baby of those 10. This accidental luck of my birth and heritage gave me opportunities for a superior education. This was in the Deep South. I'm going to read an excerpt from her memoir that says, "What is the point?" The reason why I want to read it is because, you know, Eva and I used to always talk about what was going on in terms of white supremacy. Up until the year that she died, we were still scratching our heads going, why are things the way they are now after the work that her generation had put in? And one of the things that I found was glaring is that she had opportunities in her school, in her private school, that John did not experience in his school. So I just want to read a few passages from her and what she talks about in terms of segregation and white supremacy. "The training that our parents and our black community gave us were strategies to survive." She was from North Carolina. "The culture of segregation was built on false beliefs of white supremacy, of black inferiority. Our parents and our community taught us that we were not inferior. The talents of brains and skills, both genius and mental handicaps, are equal in all humans." The skin color does not make a group of people superior human beings. This is what she writes as her understanding. The behavior we had to do was always from one of consciousness, a bargaining, reasoning voice, tone, body language, facial expression, that one would use in the dangerous situations, such as in the presence of a mad dog who might strike you at any moment. It was important to be able to read a situation quickly. Loss of your life or great harm could come to you in a second. The word of any white person was always accepted over your own, no matter the age of the white person. Your survival warnings were always up and around all white people. So the signs of malice, deceit, entrapment, greed, theft, manipulation of all kinds had to be detected quickly from observation of the white person immediately. There was never a human-to-human experience with white supremacists because you were never considered a human by them. An important lesson was that all white people are not white supremacists. Everything we knew about love and respect we learned from our parents, our community, our church, and science made us know white supremacy was a lie. The Mather experience gave us the tools to manage life in any society. Fortunately for us, when segregation was no longer the law, we were prepared to give more to the whole American experience for not only ourselves, but for everyone. I want to just come out of this for a minute. What she talks about is when she was in school, soldiers from World War II were actually coming back. Adults were coming back to the school that she was in. She had black and white teachers, and she had teachers from all over the world. So she was exposed in a way that John, who went to school in Baltimore, was not. And in her experience in those schools, there were adults teaching youngsters to be productive citizens for ourselves, our children, and our society. The skills that we already had learned to survive to age 13 were already in place. When using them, we learned new lessons. It was possible to have a normal human relationship with a white person. When you use all of your safety measures for who you can trust, there are white people who are as human as you are and can be trusted. Our teachers, black and white, taught us that our dreams could come true. I would become a dancer as a profession, like those in Swan Lake or Porgy and Bess. I'm going to skip ahead here to the end. Emphasis was placed on the development of the whole person. We were taught the proper dress for the proper occasion, the proper table setting and table manners, the correct behavior when walking in public, and the proper image for the representation of a student at Mather. We were always chaperoned by a teacher or a senior student when going downtown to shop. Everyone knew a Mather student by sight and behavior. Some stories of the effect of segregation laws on our white teachers were when they were with us in public and in strange towns like debate team, ensemble, going to church and Camden shops, stores, football games, etc. We would follow behind them. What we were identified with as students were following behind our teacher. The teacher was the chicken and we were like the little hens.
Now, you were involved with the Patuxent Review, correct?
I am still in.
You're still there. Okay.
Yes.
And how did you get involved with that?
I'm a writer. I'm a poet and writer and have been for over most of my life, actually, since I was 15. And I've been involved with the Little Patuxent Review for 11 years as a consulting editor. And as a, right now I'm a reader for fiction, and just a general all-around knowledgeable person about the literary world in the Baltimore-Washington corridor.
Mm-hmm. Will Eva's work ever be seen in Little Patuxent Review?
The memoir was actually done in coordination with another woman in that went to Mather. And she was traveling back and forth to North Carolina to meet her. Unfortunately, the year before she passed, she hadn't heard from the woman, and we don't know what happened to her. Mm. So this is sort of in flux right now. I'm sending it over to University of Baltimore to go with the rest of the stuff that's in the archives there. It's not completed. So it's more of a historical document. And can I just want to say one other thing is that one of the things that she talks about when she was at Mather is that they were very particular about how they appeared their appearances. Mm-hmm. And if anybody knows Eva, Eva was a diva. She learned how to sew there, so she made all of her clothing. She made the draperies in her house. She'd pull out stuff and she'd say, I made this coat. And you'd look at it and you go, what? Who does that? But she was also of a generation that did that. There are lots and lots of artists that I know that, you know, they took scraps of whatever they could get and they made what they, because they weren't allowed to go and buy the clothing and the stuff that they needed to have. So they made it, and they made it beautiful. And there's one thing that she talks about where that they had to wear these stockings to go to church, right? And so the white store owners wouldn't allow the black children to have, like, the real nice stockings. They kept them for their white patrons. And so what they had was these ugly, really thick things that they had to wear. And she said the first time that she and her roommate, they put them on and they were so ugly and they weren't the right color, you know. and so she took those experiences, and even something as simple as bed making. And like she lived like a queen, and her bed was a bed for a queen. And she learned, she talks about this experience of somebody from Britain that came and taught them how to dress their beds. And so she says that when she saw Downton Abbey, she understood that whole lifestyle. And it was something that she aspired to.
Well, she was surely a beautiful person inside and out. And she and John and Fern were just, to me, icons of what Columbia was all about in the 70s and the 80s and so on. Wonderful people. Okay, Linda, now could you tell us about diva John Kinderman?
Okay, so these two individuals, both Eva and John, both suffer from the same thing. An inexhaustible amount of energy. And I was reading through John's memoir. There's a point where he's in first grade and he's dancing, and the teacher tells him to stop dancing in class. And he assumed that she said it because she didn't like him. And he said, "Sit down, John Taylor." She hollered at him all the time, and he didn't realize that she was disciplining him to stop moving, dancing, and acting. And if you knew John, John was in a constant state of motion. That's what he did. And he just thought he was a mean teacher. In summer of 1943, John and his brother were sent to Stovall, North Carolina in the summer to stay with an aunt and an uncle. And it was physical and psychological shock. Total opposite of Eva's experience. He had to take off his shoes and walk barefoot over hard stones and chicken droppings. The forest and fences served as a restroom. Leaves and twigs functioned as toilet papers. Bees, wasps, and snakes took time to interrupt the process. They had to drink from a community dipper. Slept on a straw mattress. Sunday was church time. There were no electric fans, only hand fans. There was heat in the city and cold in the south. No electricity, wood-burning fireplace, no entertainment, no radio. Randolph, his brother, says, awful, awful, awful. So his experience was very different.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Than Eva's. And there are other moments in the memoir where teachers belittle him. They call him dumb. They tell him that he needs to calm down and sit down. And he's a male. Tell him to calm down and sit down, and it shuts him down. So that he goes from having an actual halfway graded grade to having a D grade. And what was interesting about him was I watched how he fought against that. And John was a well-dressed man also. He was a diva also. and he had a sort of impeccability about him. And I think that it was influenced. He was like everything that he could get away from the lack of. And I remember whenever he used to see me, he would look me up and down. You know, if I had a good outfit, he would compliment it. If I had a bad outfit, you know, he's like, what's wrong with you?
That was wonderful. Thank you so much for the insights into both Eva and also John Taylor.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, mm-hmm. Thank you, Linda Joy.
Thank you, Judy and Carolyn and Mo.
We want to close this portion of the show and thank you so much for the treasures that you brought today with Eva. And a reminder that if people want to remember Eva Anderson, there's a scholarship here at HCC named after her. And I hope that John will have a legacy like that also. Thank you, Linda Joy.
Oh, you're welcome.
Lights, camera, action. Hello, everybody. It's so nice to be here. We are kindersizing and we're making some cheer. You're going to have a good time. You're going to feel happy. And all you have to do is sing with me. Lights, camera, action. I'm very glad you came today. I'm very glad you came. Uh-oh. I'm very glad you came today. I'm very glad you came. Oh, I'm glad you came. I'm glad you came. I'm glad you came. I'm glad you came. I'm very glad you came today. I'm very glad you came. Look, I'm very glad I came today. I'm very glad I came. Sing with me. I'm very glad I came today. I'm very glad I came. Do like this. I'm glad I came. I'm glad I came. I'm glad I came. I'm glad.
Oh, the stories we could tell about Fern Eisner. She was fabulous. And we recently modeled together in a breast cancer event over at Turf Valley. I talked her into it, but she was glad that she had done it because she got free clothes, and she laughed the whole time. She, of course, was a New Yorker and brought that sophistication to Columbia. But mostly people remember her from her photographs. In fact, Linda Joy said to me, don't forget to say that Fern Eisner photographed me. So
right.
I have done so. And not only the photos that are exhibited all over the bagel stores and throughout Slayton House. I saw an old photo of Wild Lake over there the other day, and I went, ooh, that's a Fern Eisner. But even more than that, I think that the spirit that she brought to the arts was fabulous, and I will certainly miss her, as I'm sure you will too.
She was a very, very giving person, and having founded Silhouette Stages 15 years ago now, we always had a silent auction for a long, long time that we no longer do. But Fern was always there with a gift of a sitting, and whoever won that, you know, Silhouette Stages got the money, and she contributed so much to the performing arts community here in Columbia. And I remember vividly when I was in high school and got our high school portraits taken, the girls wore some type of a drape, and the guys put on a tuxedo tie and shirt and coat, and that was our portrait. Well, Fern, for years and years, and actually filmed our daughter Lauren in her, what were the official senior portraits of Lauren down by Wild Lake or by Centennial Lake or wherever out and about, and you know, much more fun pictures than girls wearing a cape and guys wearing a tuxedo. And she, so many people knew her, and through her photography and through her philanthropy also.
Let's not forget that she was also a queen shopper. Oh, she loved to shop. And guess what? She loved to get anybody something if she saw a bargain. She got me a really fabulous dress. I think it came from Lohmann's in New York, and I mean, for a real song. And she always said she wanted to photograph me and all of my many costumes. And I regret that that didn't happen. But let's not forget she was a great shopper. And gee, it's just so fun to remember all the highlights of these great people. John, I just hope that you're listening. I want you to know I was at Artscape and walking the grounds of Artscape, where we danced and did the Macarena and had the whole place partying that year. Did not leave my memory. It was just fabulous, and I loved dancing on the counter of the Big B in Caroline Street with a choreographed routine that you and I did in that commercial. I will certainly never forget those moments. And again, if you all are listening, know that you have impacted our lives and made the world a little better place than when you arrived. So keep dancing, singing, taking pictures, and contributing, because you've made a difference. So for the here and now, okay, HCC is rocking right now because their theater season starts, Mo, with Sweeney Todd. Now, you know, Miss Leavitt's pies were never quite the same, but that's all I'm going to say about that.
Exactly.
You got to come see Sondheim's mystery thriller.
With Nigel Reed.
Thank you. It is a must-see, and it begins soon, September 6th, and it just runs for 3 weeks till September 23rd. So please make sure that you get there to see that. There's quite a few plays, another Middletown followed by Things That Are Round. So check those out. They're a little later in the season. But something I'm really excited about is the independent films. I've really become an aficionado of independent films. See them down at Lakewood in Baltimore, at a theater that is particular to just showing those. We're having an international film festival here, and that is going to be in November, and then a diversity film festival. And that's going to be in February. So that's kind of a new addition that HCC has done as far as extending their film season. Also, because Linda Joy was here, and you see that she is an eloquent speaker, as you aptly said, there's going to be lots of poetry with the Hoko Palitzo. Try saying that three times fast, Mo. So how about some other word on some local events, Mo?
Well, right now, Toby's is rocking with Mamma Mia, and they are selling out almost every night. So if you don't have tickets for that, you have to get there.
And next up is Ain't Miss Behaving.
Yes.
And both Mamma Mia and other performers from Toby's will be singing their hearts out for the Ellicott City Partnership benefit here at the College Smith Theater on Monday, August 27th at 7:30 p.m. Tickets at the door.
Yes, a must-see. Please show up for that. Also, there is music. Okay, we have an awe-inspiring recital by Nikola Lugansky on piano. We have Brahms concerts. We have piano duo concerts. There's so much to do here. And the gallery here at HCC is opening with Jennifer Hudson's Paper Artist. And it is quite an interesting show. I think you're going to want to see it. There's a reception on Thursday, September 6th.
So you can't get tickets for Hamilton. Okay, I've heard that before. But you can get tickets for a really cool event at the Kennedy Center, and you have some time to figure it out. Don't buy the expensive ones. Wait till they sell regular seats. And it's for Julia Louis-Dreyfus. Do you know who she is? Elaine! Come on, guys, right?
Yes.
She's being honored for the Mark Twain Prize for American Humor. It's the 21st annual Kennedy Center event, and it's happening on Sunday, October 21st. Wait for the cheaper tickets, but do consider celebrating her career, and there'll be lots of celebs and people hanging out, a lot of funny people there.
Anything else in the arts?
Candlelight Concert Society, a long-time establishment here in Columbia. Their Concert Society programs begin on Sunday, September 30th, right here at HCC at 3 p.m. There's a whole list. You can go to the brochure, Candlelight Concert Society. It's, the world-class music comes alive.
And I have five real quick things. Silhouette Stages Cabaret Night, September. Adam's Family, Silhouette Stages, is coming up. And don't forget Dancing Under the People Tree on Friday nights down at the lakefront. And also for my voice students, there is a Tuesday night open mic every Tuesday evening the rest of the summer from 7 o'clock until people stop singing. It's a wonderful opportunity for young and old people to get up there and do their thing. A lot of going on here in Columbia.
Thank you, John. Thank you, Fern. Thank you, Eva. The arts are alive here in Columbia because of all of you. Lots to do, lots to see. Get out there and do it. Thanks, Carolyn, Mo, Razzle Dazzle Radio.
Connect with us. We are Dragon Digital Radio.